Craig, you are scary good at being Trump. Welcome to episode 56 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley. You can find me on BP Boston and at Baseball Prospectus and on Twitter at Ben Carsley. And I believe I should be the next host of this podcast because I promise to keep us safe and I'm going to make Tino great again. Brett?
My name is Brett Sayer. You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com on Twitter at dynastyguru. I think I should be the next host of Tino because I have a great relationship with Vladimir Putin, and we together shared a bottle of Yellowtail about a week ago, but I made him pay. Matt?
You're going to make me follow that. All right. My name is Mauricio Rubio. You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, and you can also find me at BP Wrigleyville. You can find me on Twitter at mrubio52. I should be the next Tino host because tonight is Mexican Independence Day, and I am currently drinking a lot of Modelo and laughing at white people talking on the TV. Craig?
My name is Craig Goldstein. I concur with my associate Ben that families are for suckers. You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, the Dynasty Guru, and Fox Sports MLB. I would also like to point out that Brett shouldn't even be here. He's fourth when it comes into hosting duties. He's never done it. I don't even know why he's here. I promise to make Tino great again, and I promise to do it by building a wall around Mauricio. You can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in courageous debater Goldstein.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to try to keep this fair tonight. I want to give everyone equal time. Craig, as the leading poller, you are going to get our first reader Elm of the Week. But if you directly address Mauricio or Brett, they will have a chance to counter before we move on. That being said, please let me drive. So our first reader email of the week is from Kyle. Kyle asks a really good question that I think a lot of the American people want to know. Why is this segment called Reader Emails? Are we not listeners? So, Craig, you can debate that. But first, I want to get to the real question here. Kyle says he's made several win-now moves this year, and he's in a championship of his head-to-head dynasty league. Among these deals was trading Yoan Moncada for Johnny Cueto. Cueto's implosion has landed Kyle on his bench when he needs him most. He sees Moncada's sparkle in his eyes, and he hates himself when he goes to sleep. This is a story that resonates with a lot of the middle class right now. Can you hold Kyle close and tell him he's okay, Craig?
I can't tell him he's okay. Johnny Cueto is out there. Yoan Moncada is out there. I can't protect him. He made these decisions on his own. And I'd like to go back for a minute to the reader email, listener email thing and just say that, again, is also not my problem. That's up for the readers and or listeners to decide. That's not for me to decide. But, you know, the reality here is that Yoan Moncada might be the best prospect in the game by the time that we come out with rankings next year. I mean, probably not fantasy prospect, but overall prospect. I think he has that type of ability. And I do think some people are being irresponsible with the way that they're throwing around comparisons here and there. They're saying Mike Trout. I think, you know, who's Mike Trout? Nobody, only the one Mike Trout. But the reality is that Johnny Cueto's a talented pitcher, and I don't think you're going to regret having him. Brett, do you care to respond?
Yeah, I care to respond. I get making the trade. It's Cueto was I traded for Cueto in a league about 5 weeks ago, and I've hated myself most of the time since. And you know, sometimes
along
that
with
just
the rest
happens.
Of America, by the way.
Yeah, well, the rest of America, and you know, I will not finish that sentence. But Moncada, I think we warned against people rushing to get too down on Moncada based on how he started off the year. And I am going to take kind of the opposite approach and warn people not to get too crazy excited about Moncada the way he finished the year. He's way too talented to be in able. I think he is clearly going to be a top 10 fantasy prospect at the end of the year. I think it's certainly possible that he could be top 5. But I think that I think that people may go a little overboard with him during the off season. I think Johnny Cueto will probably be fine. You have to kind of quantify that a little bit. But you kind of don't. Cueto has a really long track record of success, and plenty of people go to the American League and struggle a little bit at first. And I don't really buy into this being a death knell for his future value or anything. I still think he's going to be a top 15 starting pitcher when we rank guys in the offseason, at least for me. And I think while there may come a day where this trade hurts, I don't think that happens in the next year or two.
I just like to jump in for a second and say I think it's already happened. It's already hurting him. I don't know how you could ignore something like that.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Mauricio, we're going to give you the table now. Talk a little bit about not this problem specifically. Talk a little bit about this whole theory. This is a debate we've had for a long time. Just because this move didn't work out, does this mean the entire concept behind it is bad?
Well, you have to go back and think about what America wanted. When the trade happened, right? America wanted Cueto in front of a great defense, and that's what America got. America got Cueto in front of the Royals' defense, which has been, remarkable all season long. Now, is it America's fault that Cueto has underperformed despite having a tremendous defense behind him? No, it's not America's fault. So, I think that you can certainly look at the end result, and America should be unhappy with what has happened. But I think that when you go back to the thought process behind the trade, and when you evaluate what America thought Cueto was going to do in front of the Royals' defense, and kind of balance that out against what you think Moncada is going to project out to be, I can't really fault the thought process all that much. Certainly, the results are not great, but I think that America's thought process was not incorrect. And I think that if you're going to criticize America's thought process, then I have to question your patriotism.
All right, that's fair. I'm going to do something that's a little unusual for a moderator here, but I want to get something out in the open. The next reader email is from Jeff, and Jeff calls into view one of my last interviews, and he says, "Can you tell me what the hell happened to Garin Casgini this year? He was the only real prospect I took in the Listener League draft. I was expecting a fairly safe, if unexciting, high-contact guy who would be good for OBP and extra base hits with low strikeout, homer, and steal totals. Now he's apparently been passed on the Sox minor league depth chart by a 13-year-old from Braintree who wandered onto the field looking for the funnel cake stand. I'm in the playoffs, and I have a solid, mostly under 30 MLB roster, but my farm is a barren wasteland if Cini's prospect star is really burnt out. Seriously, after that, it's Tyrone Taylor, Aaron Blair, and Grafer Andrade. Is there still hope, or should I cue the Enya and say a tearful goodbye? Jeff." So it sounds like Jeff needs a bailout, and I think I'm partially to blame for that because I've been on the Cini bandwagon forever, clearly. Last year when he had a down year, I was very vocal about my belief that he would be the person I saw and scouted all throughout the minor leagues. This was indeed based on experience, which, by the way, is not something that every other candidate on this podcast has. I was there watching Cini in person. But it fell apart. Obviously, it didn't work out in AAA this year. He's hit terribly worst season of his professional career by a fairly substantial margin, and when you add that on to the middle of his 2014 campaign, in which he also wasn't that great, it's really hard to see anything but sort of a quad A player, maybe someone who can survive on a second division bench for many years. I just missed it. I thought that the contact rates would stay stable because I really liked the bat-to-ball ability. I never thought he'd have big power. I never thought he'd steal anything. I know he stole a ton of bases in 2013 when he was in the low minors. I was very vocal about that not being real, but I did believe in the bat, and now I don't so much anymore. America loves a comeback story. Cini is only 24. There is plenty of time, but while I think he still potentially has an MLB future, I don't really think he has much of a future in fantasy leagues, and all I would say is that you can't win them all, but I have the bravery and I have the fortitude to stand up here in front of you, the Tino listeners, and tell you that I was wrong. And that's not something that I think any other candidate on this podcast has ever done.
I just said that on Twitter like 12 hours ago.
Fuck. Does anyone else have Cini thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it was someone we couldn't trust from the get-go because we can't even figure out how to say his last name. It probably should be Tahini, you know, but for the love of God, this person, I don't know why we would ever put trust in someone like this, is all I'm trying to say. And I don't know what this guy's trying to do when he's sending in emails to you. You know, I'm trying to be friendly to you as a moderator here, but what is a Greifer Andrade? What is that? Who's working with that? That's ridiculous.
Sounds like a Dungeons and Dragons character.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And that's exactly what America needs less of. We're trying to get out there and prove our strength, not be nerds in a thing, you know, dropping dice and declaring war on elves.
No, we're going to be nerds we're not going to be nerds. Instead, we are going to draft 19-year-olds for our fake baseball teams, which is what America wants.
All right, thank you very much. All right, it's time. We need to give Brett some more airtime here. Brett, you've been described as by Rotolando as perhaps the most moderate of our Tino hosts. What do you say about Cecchini? Was this avoidable, or is this just a case of, you know, the trials and travails that come with being in the upper minors, cutting someone off at the knees?
Yeah, I think it's the skills were there, and obviously the performance didn't match, but I think the process was sound in this one. I think it was reasonable for us to expect Cecchini to be a low end fantasy option, a somewhat safe low end fantasy option, and he's really just kind of cratered, and that just sometimes happens in the developmental process. Really, not a whole lot you can do about that as a fantasy owner.
All right, Brett, I'm going to stick with you because you are indeed second in the polls, and I don't think you've gotten enough time yet. So I'm going to start you off with our third reader email, which is from Jack. Jack says, gentlemen, when looking forward, how do you value what kind of depth you want to hold on to? My team isn't very good, and I feel obligated to take the best performers I can get, especially since I am looking at backup outfielders. Melky Cabrera has brought me joy in the past, but Ender Inciarte seems to be the same thing but younger and about 30 pounds lighter. Should I stick with the proven guy or take Inciarte, who checks the what have you done for me lately box? Thank you for your help. If this question is dumb in the future, you can just reply to me with this GIF. I know it's supposed to be GIF, but that's just not how I was raised. So that is Jack's question. Brett, I'm going to let you take this off. Please ignore the character insults here in terms of the weight disparity. We don't need any of that. We're not in kindergarten anymore, but just address the underlying problem here.
I don't know how we can avoid it, really. I think the comment that Melky has 30 pounds on Inciarte is a slight underestimate. I think that's probably closer to 60 or 70 pounds. But that aside, I think Inciarte is a different you know, sort of balance of home runs and steals, but you know, he's really kind of taken the place of what Gerard Parra was a couple of years back, as a guy who, you know, won't play 150 games, won't do anything all that well, but provides a solid baseline of stats in deeper leagues. And I think it's investable in a deep league. I think the speed is relatively consistent. I mean, he had 19 steals last year, 18 steals this year, probably gets to 20 by the end of the year. He doesn't strike out very much, which is conducive to hitting for a high average, which he has this year. I think he's never really going to hit for power, but you know, if he hit for power, he'd be, you know, an outfield two. So don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but you know, as a guy who's a fourth or fifth outfielder in a deep mixed league, I'm buying it. Craig?
All right, I'm going to give this to Craig as someone else who has, you know, sort of struggled with the weight issue on a national scale here, you know, correlating, you know, does how big you are make you unfit to lead? Can you respond to Brett's questions here?
You know, I would just like to say that I think in a lot of ways, bigger is better. I'm not afraid to be what I am, and it's gotten me where I am today, which is leading the polls here. That's all I'm trying to say here. You know, I think, you know, between these two guys, I'm going to take a guy like Melky Cabrera. He's been there. He's done it before. You know, he's been a solid player over the middle months of the season. He's had a bad start, a bad end, and that's going to leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth. That's completely understandable. I'm not asking you I'm not asking you to like it. No one's going to like it because we like winners here in America, and this has been a loser of a season, okay? But what I'm asking you to do is not become a hater. Ender and Ciarte really isn't much of anything. And he's not going to get any playing time in the Arizona outfield. Not to mention, look, I don't want to get too – I know this is politics, but I don't want to get too far into it. But God only knows what happens in Arizona. I think we can all agree on that. Mal, I think you can attest to that especially.
Some weird things happen in Arizona, especially involving rental cars. When you throw spring training into the mix, and I don't want to comment further on that at all, so we'll just leave it at that.
It's probably best that you don't.
Right, I think it would be incriminating for all parties involved. So I think that when you're talking about Ender Inciarte, who is if you're thinking about adding Ender Inciarte, you already have a loser's mentality because you're just kind of hoping for safe. Whereas if you're going for Melky, you know, there's a little bit of upside there. I don't think I think the final stat line is not going to be as indicative for what he can provide moving forward as I think that we would all like to be. So, right. If you'll excuse me, I'm going to take a water break because I am a Rubio. So I will be right back.
All right. Well, Mal, we're actually going to stay with you as we end the first block here.
Fuck.
You know, okay. I think we're at the point where all of our track records are known. You know, we've sort of gotten all our feelings about like the key stances out there. What people want to know now is more about our personalities. So the last question of the reader emails we have goes to you. This is an anonymous reader email, and it asks, we all know the four tastes are salty, sweet, sour, and bitter. We also know that there are four members of Tino. Which member of Tino is which taste? Mal, go off.
Well, I think salty is very easy. That's Craig. You know, as much as I love you, Craig, I really
couldn't agree more. And I think it's a good thing. But right. Go ahead. I'm going to let you finish. It's your floor here.
I think Craig is definitely salty. I am bitter, mainly because of having to deal with Cubs Twitter on a daily basis. That has just made me very bitter. Ben, the decision becomes very difficult, but I want to be host to make the difficult decisions. I am going to assign Ben sour, and I'm going to assign Brett sweet. Strictly because Brett has children and Ben does not. So, and I think that America values the family, and I think not having children precludes you from being sweet, Ben. So,
all right, Brett, you were called out specifically in that answer, so I'm going to give you a chance to address. Do you agree with that breakdown, or would you change anything?
Oh, I'm good. I agree with my fellow candidate here. I'm very good.
All right. Well, that's a good cap to block one. And, you know, gentlemen, thank
you
for...
Well, excuse me. Am I not going to get a
Craig, you've had enough time.
This
Craig,
is ridiculous.
Craig, thank you. You've had enough time. We're going to go to break now. I'd just like to say that this was very civil. And, you know, we may have our disagreements, but we all have to agree that Enya's America must end. Welcome back to episode 56 of Tino. If you didn't watch any of the Republican debate, I can only imagine how much that first section must have thrown you for a loop. The only solace you can take is that I promise that's how we felt watching it. So now we're going to sort of slide back into a more normal gear and continue the series that we left off last Tino, where we are going position by position, basically discussing guys who have seen massive swings in value one way or another this year, asking if we think they're for real, if they're better, asking if we think they can rebound, if they've been bad, just trying to get a lay of the land for, you know, if you should be trying to trade for them now, how you should be valuing them headed into the offseason, and so on and so forth. So we did catcher and first base last episode. We are going to do second base and third base this episode, and we'll see how the time goes. Maybe we will get to shortstop as well. But after looking at all the names the four of us brainstormed on, the first guy we should talk about for second base is someone who I find to be very difficult to evaluate from a fantasy point of view, and that is D. Gordon. DeGordon is hitting .331, .357, .414 with 51 steals and 75 runs. He is currently the top fantasy second baseman. He is currently the top fantasy middle infielder. And while Jose Altuve is fairly close to him, no one else is particularly close to those two. I don't think anyone on this podcast has been super high on Gordon before. Brett, I will flip it out to you. Is it time for us to change our minds?
To an extent, yes. I think that I still do not think this batting average is repeatable. I think, but you know, the I think the bar for what should be expected next year has gone up because of what he's done this year. He puts the ball in play, runs fast, and he is making harder contact than I thought he was going to at the major league level. I think at this point he's pretty clearly a top three second baseman. And though I do not think I would put him at number one, it's hard not to call him a top, 25 player at this point. With speed down across the league in general, the only other guy who's going to get to 50 steals this year is Billy Hamilton, and we know what the rest of his numbers look like. So it's kind of a big fucking deal. Craig, what about you?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we've talked about my struggles with valuing guys who generate the largest portion of their value from speed. But I do think at this point, the value shift is substantial, and that most of that is probably going to be expected to be retained. Even if the average isn't 331, he's hit over 300 every single month but July, when he hit 208. So he can really hit, and as long as he kind of maintains his strength, I think, I watched him a lot last year as a Dodger, and he was really good until he, the latter half of the season, I think, just wore him down. I think you could argue he was better prepared for that, and that's why it's carrying through most of the season this year. But that's more anecdotal than it is anything that we can really draw a conclusion from in one season sample size. I think he's a guy that is, I think if, at this point, again, I wouldn't put him first overall at second, but I think you can – I wouldn't be surprised if he's the most valuable second baseman at the end of next season either, if that makes sense. Ben?
Yeah, so I think – and Craig, you and I discussed this a little bit when we posted a Dynasty Dynamics, sort of taking the top five prospective fantasy second baseman and discussing their merits and demerits. I think what I've settled on with Gordon is that he's high risk, he's high reward, obviously, but you have to be willing that the average might fall. I think if you can stomach the idea of taking Gordon and maybe he only hits you with a 260 average and you feel like your team is well equipped to handle that, fine. The steals are going to be there no matter what. Obviously, he'll have less opportunity to run if he doesn't get on base as much, but at the end of the day, he's going to provide enormous value in steals, and he's not going to provide average any value in homers or RBI. So,
but the upside is that if he does hit for average, and even if it's 300 and not 332, he barely walks. So that's actually, you're getting like a ton of 300 batting average when you get
right,
him.
Right, very true.
Yeah, this was the Altuve argument from last year, right?
Correct.
This was why when Mike did his valuations, this is part of the reason why Altuve was so valuable. It's that batting average. It's Ichiro syndrome.
Yes. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you just have to be – if you're prepared for the possibility that Gordon might look more like a good middle infielder, fine. But it's hard to deny that at this point the upside is the best overall fantasy second baseman. I wouldn't put money on that happening, but it wouldn't surprise me anymore. It can't surprise us anymore. Mal?
No, yeah, I mean, I would just like to tack on to Craig's point about the profile. I think that this player profile is always going to be a little bit problematic when you're talking about basically a two-tool player, and someone who's going to be able to provide some value in run score depending on what the team looks like behind him. But yeah, I would agree. I would agree with the consensus that you have to change your tabulation when it comes to D. Gordon a little bit, because you know this is 2 years of him doing this now, and it's really hard to argue with the results that he's produced. And you know, again, to follow up on Craig's point, if he's a 280 or 300 hitter, like that's still a lot of value there. You're getting out of him via the stolen bases and just a ton of hits. So
yeah. Okay, so I'm going to move us on to someone that Craig and I got ripped apart for not including in our discussion of potential top dynasty second baseman, and that is Rugi Odor, who had a horrendous start to the year, went down to the minors, and has been in Fuego ever since. He has raised his line to 273, 330, 474 in just about 400 plate appearances, 13 homers, 5 steals, pretty solid run and RBI totals. And as everyone is quick to point out, the dude is still only 21 years old. Craig, I know you sort of got into it in the comments with people. Where is Rugi Odor for you in terms of, is he a top, I'm sure he's a top 10 dynasty second baseman now, but where does he lie in that spectrum for you?
Yeah, that's tough, and it's something that I haven't really delved into in terms of ranking second baseman overall at this point, beyond kind of what we did. I think he's right on the fringe, and in the comments of that article, I would admit, I think if you want to include him in that discussion of top overall second baseman, I think that's okay, especially based on his production since being recalled, which is it's incredible that he was one of the worst major leaguers in baseball until he got sent down. Since his recall, he's at 316, 357, 554. And that's over just under 300 plate appearances. So that's a big deal. I think the reason I would struggle to put him in that overall conversation is he doesn't steal bases, or he doesn't steal them well. He's 5 of 11 this year. And when obviously on pure volume, he can get you a decent number. But I think unless he was going to steal, 15 plus, I don't expect, he's hit 13 home runs this year. I wouldn't expect a sizable jump. I mean, he's pretty much maxed out physically. So while he is young, I'm not sure I see like a huge jump in power coming. He can obviously hit, he can have a 500 slugging percentage over 300 plate appearances. So it's not that he's without power, but I wouldn't necessarily expect him to make, gains in that category like you would necessarily project for other prospects, someone like possibly a Carlos Correa or someone like that.
Right. So that's perfect, because that was going to be my next point, as I think people see Rugi's age and they think, well, if he's this good now, he's going to be, this good times whatever number you figure in 3 years. Mal, talk a little bit about why that's not necessarily the case, or if you think it is the case with Odor, correct me.
Well, I think that when you look at certain players' abilities and skill sets and what they're bringing to the table, certain things are going to improve as they age. And certain things are just, once you see the production out of the box, there's just not a whole lot of projection left there. And that's just kind of who they are. I think that Odor in the second half and what he's produced since the call-up, it's a lot of production. I think it might be a little bit of heavy production, but I think that's about what you can expect. And I don't think there's going to be a hell of a lot of improvement off of what he's done in the second half, primarily because what he's done in the second half has just been so damn impressive. But also because that's just kind of what the skill set was hinted at when he was a prospect. And every once in a while, when you're evaluating a prospect in the lower minors and you shoot a projection on someone, they can hit that pretty quick. And when they hit it, I think, something that you were talking to Ben, something you were alluding to, is that people have a tendency to just kind of be like, well, if he's got 15 home runs, then in 5 years he'd be hitting like 30 home runs. And sometimes that just doesn't come around, because it's not within the player's profile to produce that. So Odor's second half has been tremendous, but I think that's what you can expect in terms of like a ceiling. Again, primarily because he's just been damn impressive, but also because that's just kind of what the profile was hinting at.
Right. Logan Forsyth is hitting .285 with 16 homers, 9 steals, 60 RBI, and 65 runs. He is the 9th best fantasy second baseman this year. Will Rugi Odor be a top 10 fantasy second baseman next year?
Yes.
How high would you go in the top 10?
I'd say 7. 7
was,
or 8.
Was that a useless question?
No. Yeah. The question with Odor is this. I think we all agree that there's really not a next level from what he's doing now. But and I'm curious to ask you guys this, because I have my thoughts on this. He's obviously been hitting for a great average since he's come back up, but he's hit for the power, I think, has been more unexpected than the average, at least from where he was as a prospect. Do you guys think that the average is at this level is more sustainable than the power at this level right now?
You know, it's an irresponsible average at this point, but I would bet on the average sticking around more than I would the power, yeah.
Craig?
I mean, if you're talking about this run since June 15th, when he's recovered, I don't think he's a 315, 330 guy.
Well, let me rephrase. Do you think there is over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, what do you think is more likely? He hits above 300 for a full season, or he hits above 20 home runs for a full season?
I would. So the thing is, I was going to answer that. I think let me answer by not answering. He's hitting on the season right now, .273, .330, .474. And honestly, I think that's about right. It's just come at with two very different like sides of the spectrum in terms of performance. I don't think a .460 or .470, maybe .480 slugging is out of the question for him. He can really hit, and I think he can wear out the gaps, and I think he's got a little pop. But I don't know. I guess on the off chance, I just think it's more likely he hits 300 than it is 20 homers. But I think the slugging is for real, I guess. It's just not necessarily going to be home runs.
I totally agree with that, honestly.
I think that's a very good point. And, you know, he's a guy who I think is going to rack up a lot of extra base hits. And that's part of the reason why I think Odor is particularly attractive in points leagues, which is, you know, he's one of those guys where he could hit 12 home runs in a season and still have a similar slugging percentage to a guy that hits 25 home runs.
Yeah, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's a, you know, because I love the guy, and I hope he's a 20 homer hitter. I think he's more likely in the 15 range. And I think he could do a reasonable, like what Jason Kipnis is doing or what he has done. I don't think that's unreasonable. You know, he was a guy who would hit 14 or 17 home runs and have a high slugging percentage and steal some bags and hit pretty well. You know, I think he can be that type of guy.
Okay. All right. Any other Odor thoughts before we move us on?
That's a hell of a family they got going on. Right there, the Odors.
That's true.
All right, solid follow-up. I will move us on now to Devon Travis, who I've gotten into plenty of arguments about this season, but I'll kick it up to someone else first. 304, 361, 498, but only in 240 plate appearances. He's been out forever now with a shoulder injury. He was recently transferred to the 60-day DL. He spent some time in the minors. So very promising while he was in the majors, but largely derailed by injury. That being said, still only 24 and will be 25 for all of next season. So there's certainly reason for optimism here, especially in that ballpark and in that lineup. The 8 homers were a bit of a surprise to me, I will say. Also had 3 steals in his time. Mao, I don't think we've started with you yet. Do you think Travis is someone who can profile as a top 12 second baseman with regularity?
Top 12 with regularity. I think he can. The 8 home runs were a surprise to me as well. I feel like those all happened within the first week of his year, though, if I'm not mistaken. I don't see a 500 slugging percentage coming around for the guy again. I do think he can hit a little bit. I think that second base is such that a top 12 ranking for him isn't irresponsible. I certainly feel like he's going to be in the back half of the top 12, but I think this is a player who can, he can produce with the average a little bit, and he's probably going to be more of a doubles hitter than he is a home run guy. But I kind of like him a little bit.
Craig?
Yeah, I'm more comfortable in the top 15. I'm not as comfortable in the top 12. I don't think the power is for real. I think a mitigating factor is what you talked about, that lineup. If he's, even if he's kind of a 330, 340 on base guy, Gibbons is actually a pretty good manager when it comes to creating a lineup. He's willing to do some different things like bat too low leadoff. So he's not necessarily the Ron Garden hire, the second baseman hits second guy. But I do think it would be tempting to put a guy like Travis atop the lineup in that two hole. He makes a good bit of contact, so he can, he's versatile in that sense. So I think he could score a lot of runs, which would obviously help him out. But as we always talk about, relying on contextual factors to make the case is questionable at best. So I'm not really, I know that, I know BA was high on him last year where we weren't. And so I don't want to come off as closed-minded in that sense, but I'm not sold on the pedigree being there for him to do this type of, this type of performance over a full season would obviously land him well above the top 12. But I still think, if you expand it to top 15, I'd be a little more comfortable.
Brett, do you have any wildly disparate views here on Travis, or are you sort of in the same vein?
Nah, I'm in agreement with what's been said.
Okay, I'll go. I don't think he's that good. I think he's going to have a career as a major league starter. I think because of contextual factors, he could be a more valuable fantasy player than I was originally willing to let on. But I sure as hell don't see him as someone who projects to hit, what would he have been at, 22, 24 homers over a full season? And while people aren't really saying that, I think a lot of fantasy players are looking at this line and thinking Travis is someone who can flirt with 300, hit, between 15 and 20, maybe kind of do a lot of the things we were talking about Rugi doing, and I don't see that for him. I know he hit well at various stops throughout the minors, but I see him as someone who's more of an empty average and not a super high average, more of a 280-ish guy. So that could change in Toronto because he might score a ton of runs, as Craig alluded to, and that park might help him get closer to the 15-homer mark than I originally thought he would. But I'm not willing to go anywhere near top 12 Dynasty second baseman for him. Oh, I said for next year, so I won't throw Dynasty in, but I'd be hard-pressed to go top 15, never mind top 12. I'm the low man on Travis.
Just, well, since we didn't really address it with Odor, we did talk a lot about next year, but that discussion in our comments was about Dynasty value. Brett, where, just off the top of your head, where do you have Odor for second baseman in a Dynasty?
I think he's certainly top 10. I think probably in the 7 to 9 range. Okay. So right in the back of the top 10. Okay. I'm comfortable with him there.
Okay. We will move on to the final second baseman then, and that is Mao. Want to do the honors?
Arismendi Alcantara.
Thank you very much. Pretty disappointing year, especially for Tino, because I know at least Craig and I were quite high on him. Brett, I don't think you hated him. Mao, I can't admit to remembering exactly your feelings. But did nothing. Did nothing all year is really – I don't have to even elaborate. Did nothing all year. And after the Cubs' offseason moves, I think we weren't quite sure how he was going to squirrel any playing time for himself, and it just really didn't happen. So the good news is he's going to only be 24 for next year. Bad news is he wasn't good in AAA either. Craig, defend your turf.
I mean, I think people have off years. I don't know, you know, what else to say. There's not a defense of his performance. He swings and misses a lot. At AAA, it was at 25%. That's not especially out of line with his previous performance in the minors. It's a little higher. He still walked a decent amount. I think he had a really bad year, and I'm not quitting on the tools. I think, you know, if you want to make excuses, you can say, you know, they moved him around. They put him in center field. They put him at second base. They moved him around. I think that's a really good role for him overall. But do I think it can mess with your approach and what your focus is on and how much time you're dedicated to hitting? I think it's possible. I also think those are, you know, ultimately excuse, or, you know, I'd rather those be reasons and not excuses. There are plenty of people who move around all the time and don't lose their focus. So, you know, on that level, I think it's just a really bad year, and I'm excited to see what he can do next year just in terms of a rebound. Cause I think there's opportunity to, you know, to buy an asset here that is probably not thought very highly of given all the players in front of him, and, you know, see if he can turn it around. Cause I think he can earn at bats even if he's not a full-time player. So the number of names ahead of him isn't necessarily as big of a roadblock as it may seem, but, you know, there's also the chance he ends up elsewhere or someone in front of him ends up elsewhere. So I don't know, Mao, do you have a different read on it?
I think that a lot of the issues that Alcantara had this year stem from just kind of a poor approach that he carried over from a lot of the Dominican Winter League that he was playing. You know, I think that a lot of the damage that he was trying to do was very pull oriented, and he got very pull happy during the season and kind of abandoned an opposite field approach. So a lot of the things that you didn't see from Alcantara from his brief time with the big league club and down in AAA is that you saw him trying to pull home runs instead of going the opposite field with like maybe just a single or whatever, and that's, you know, something that stems from, it's just an approach issue. Like the tools are still present. He's still got the bat speed, and he's still got the strong wrist, and he's still got the potential for power and speed. But none of that matters if you're not able to utilize your hit tool to its full potential. And Alcantara didn't do that this year. So
do you think that's likely to change, or do you want to throw maybe like a percentage chance that it changes or something, you know what I mean? Just to say, like, obviously I don't want to put words in your mouth for likely, but, you know, maybe there's a 40% chance that he gets it together or something like that.
You know, I don't know if you've seen Baez at all this year, but this is the organization that has made some really marked improvements in what Baez has done in terms of approach at the plate. So it'd be foolish to sit here and completely write off Alcantara as a player completely in the Cubs organization because they, I mean, however it is that they do it, whether it's just because they acquire the talent or that they develop the talent out or have worked with certain talents, they do produce position players. So, it's kind of a mixed history there, but if I had to throw out a percentage chance on Alcantara's, ability to kind of just adjust the approach, I'd probably put it at 60%, maybe even 70%, if I was feeling good about it. So, I'm not writing off Alcantara. I think that a lot of the things that he was having issues with stem, again, from a pull-happy approach, but I think that's something that you can fix a lot easier than just having a 40 overall hit tool potential. So, you know, this is a talented player, and I don't think you can write him off quite yet. I think that if it comes around to be next year and he's still doing the same things, that's when you worry. But yeah. Until then, yeah. I just wouldn't.
All right, I want to move us on to third base and to someone who's had the polar opposite year of Alcantara. And that is Miguel Sano, who is at 276, 389, 561 with 16 homers and 47 ribbies in basically half a season in the majors. And he put up a line quite similar to that in half a season in Double A. This dude did not play at all in 2014. Is coming off an injury. never saw AAA and has been absolutely crushing. Obviously, we were all high on Sano before the year began. Everyone in the universe was high on Sano. But it was kind of hard to see him being this good this soon. Brett, do we have to worry about any sort of sophomore slump with Sano, or do you think he is a top 10 fantasy third baseman next year?
I think you have to worry about a sophomore slump with anybody, but I think given the state of third base, I'd feel pretty comfortable with him at the back end of the top 10 just for 2016. I think this is his talent level. We talked about it earlier in the podcast. I mean, with different guys, but we've seen more and more players come up to the majors and play at their expected talent level much faster than we're used to seeing. And, you know, Sano is definitely one of those guys. He's, you know, he's clearly even more valuable in an on-base league. He's really got a good approach at the plate. And, you know, the power obviously is pretty unquestioned. I mean, that he's, you know, he had either the best or the second best power tool in the minors over the last three, four seasons. So, you know, I think, for next year, I think the 276 average is a little high unless he cuts down on the strikeouts a little bit more. But, you know, I think expecting, you know, sort of a 255, 260 average with 35 homers, I think is perfectly reasonable. I think, you know, obviously there's risk and obviously there's downside with a younger player who hasn't quite hit the struggles yet. But, you know, there's nothing particularly alarming about Sano that would make me not want to invest in him compared to other rookie players.
Yeah, Brett, to illustrate your point about the current state of third base, the 11th ranked fantasy third baseman right now is Yunel Escobar. And the only reason he's there is because of a 320 average.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shit show.
Yeah, and that position is going to lose.
It's pretty strong at the top, though. It's
strong at the top, but that's who number 11th is, and this is a list that's going to lose Chris Davis. Xander Bogaerts, and Alex Rodriguez, who are also in the top 8.
Yeah. No, I just meant the top 4, like when we had the third base.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very strong at the top. And Sano was in our honorable mention.
I think you're going to start gaining some players as well. I do agree. I think it's top heavy, but I think that there's some help coming along the way.
In terms of who?
I think you're talking about Bryant. I think Correa eventually moves over to third base, and I just think there's going to be some help coming, kind of filling out that bottom. Also, there's always some random shortstop who moves over to third base.
Did you say Correa was going to move to third?
I think eventually, yeah. I don't think next year.
When is eventually?
Probably when
Alex Rodriguez moves to third?
Or? No. Well, I mean, you know, I think that when you're talking about 3 to 5 years, I think, yeah, that's something that could happen.
I moved to third my junior year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all.
Just saying, I think the comp stands, so.
I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all, so.
No, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't assert it, I guess. But that aside, I think I agree with Brett about basically everything he said, and especially the numbers he threw out for next year. But I also would just point out that, he's striking out at 37% right now. So to say like a 276 average shouldn't be expected is a bit of an understatement. I'm anticipating, like Brett said, maybe 250, maybe 260, but I'm also anticipating that with not like cutting down on the strikeouts a little, but like a fairly substantial cut, at least to the 30% range. Am I being unreasonable in my expectations? Am I being unreasonable in assuming he needs to cut down that much to get the average to there? I mean, we're talking about a 413 BABIP, and I know he hits the ball really goddamn hard, but 413 is pretty much in terms of repeatability.
No, it's impossible.
No one does that for the most part.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing is that I think Sano has the approach and the skill with the bat to reduce the strikeout rate.
I think he can drop it. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he had a strikeout rate that started with a 2 next year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely in his developmental cycle. And if he does that, then, you know, if he can reduce
his... He could be 275, yeah.
If he could be a 25% strikeout guy, maybe not in 2016, maybe 2017, 2018, shit, he could be a 280 hitter with the kind of exit velocity he produces and all that. I think it's reasonable.
Totally,
he has to take that step, and we need to see it before we invest in it at that level. But you know, it's this. There's no doubting the skill with Sano, and that's the thing,
agreed,
right?
Agreed.
You're investing in the skill,
and that's why I wanted to say I didn't want to mean it as a knock on him, because I think he can make that adjustment. But I also think if we're anticipating a 260 average, he needs to get it down to at least lower 30% strikeout range.
Sure.
Just on a pure contact basis, you know. But yeah, that's it.
Okay. I think everyone loves Sano, so we're really just arguing about degrees of how good he's going to be. Let's sort of move on to someone who's had the antithesis of his immediate success in Mike Moustakas, who Craig and I know at least left him for dead really after last year. But he was hitting 282, 345, 455, excuse me.
455.
Yeah, 445.
445.
18. We're no longer doing the Republican debate. I can't use that accent. 18 homers, 71 ribbies, 63 runs. That is good for the 13th most productive fantasy third baseman in 2015. Moustakas has been around forever, it feels like, but he's still only 27, and he just turned 27. Next year is really his age 27 season. So, Mao, I will kick this out to you first. Is Moustakas going to reliably be a top 15 option in Dynasty Leagues at the hot corner, or is this a mirage?
I mean, I don't know. We just talked about how weak third base is. And while I previously stated that I do think that some help is coming, I think that you can probably pretty confidently project out Moustakas to be a top 15 guy. I know the issues have been very prevalent with him in the past, but it appears that he's made some very serious adjustments coming into this year. I don't think he hit an opposite field home run throughout his entire career, which encompassed a serious amount of at-bats, and he's hit his fair share of those this year. He was slumping a little bit in the middle of the season, but he's rebounded in August and September to really put up some solid numbers. I don't think I'm not projecting out like a top 5 finish for him ever, but I think that when you're talking about top 15, I think you can project that out. Craig, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, the most compelling point here is that after the top 4, it's a shit show. But the fact that he's kind of had this renaissance and is 13th doesn't really say much to me. He's an absolute, like, you're punting stolen bases with him, as you are with a lot of third basemen, but it's still a consideration in terms of his overall value. I said some things last year, and I was wrong about those things. But at least this year, I'm not really convinced that I'm going to be wrong going forward. I will say, you know, he's got a 290 BABIP this year. He's a career 267. That all seems pretty low. So I'm willing to grant that, you know, 290 going forward isn't unreasonable despite his career precedent. I know there was a lot of talk early on about him, you know, going in the opposite field and not hitting into the shift as much. I don't know how much of that is his intent and how much of that is just kind of how it was working out. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him this year. He's been great, you know, kind of throughout the year except for July. But he's had really good months all the way, you know, everywhere else. I don't I have trouble buying into this 1 year given the number of plate appearances we saw him struggle for early on. And as you said, he's 27, so it's not like it's completely insane for that to happen. I guess I'm just wary of buying in despite the prospect pedigree and all of that. I would need to see it again next year, and I'm not willing to – I don't think he'll be a top 15 guy next year, but I will eat crow if and when the time comes.
I just want to put this out there because they both had a little bit of a renaissance, as it were. I'm asking the entire panel here. Would you rather – are you putting more faith into Moustakas or Bubba Starling?
Ooh.
Moustakas.
Yeah, that's not a serious question, right?
Can I
– I enjoy the softballs. Moustakas. Moustakas or Will Middlebrooks?
Craig?
I'm gonna say Starling to be contrarian.
Moustakas or Brandon Wood?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I've heard
Andy Marte.
I've heard a couple of
Joel Guzman.
That's Shea Hillenbrand.
Oh, Brad.
Shea Hillenbrand.
Yeah.
Oh. There you go.
I feel like we're missing someone. Obvious
Josh Vitters.
Billy Rowell. Yeah. Billy Rowell.
Wow.
I needed that. All right. Let's get on to our last two here. We've talked about this player a fair amount on Tino, so I don't think this needs to be a terribly lengthy breakdown. But Nick Castellanos is hitting .250, .301, .417. He does have 15 homers and 69 of the nicest RBI you will ever see in 541 plate appearances. Overall, that ranks him as the 37th best fantasy third baseman. Brett, are you throwing in the towel on Casty yet, or do you think there's still hope for a really good season here?
I'm not throwing in the towel on him. I think expectations are slightly lower. If you want to play the second half game, which is a dangerous game to play, and some people probably will in the off season. If you go back to July 1st, since then he's hitting .269 with 11 homers and 41 RBI in 65 games, which is, you know, if you try to prorate that out, you'll probably hurt yourself, but it's pretty good. The batting average, I think, has been the biggest disappointment for me with Castellanos, as I think it probably has been with everyone. He was kind of, you know, he showed as a guy who could make a lot of contact, and he really has not done that at the major league level. Even when he's been playing well, he hasn't made a ton of contact. So, you know, I think this is sort of the base level. I think the best you can realistically hope for with Castellanos is sort of a .260/.020 season, and maybe with the amount that maybe with it, where he hits in that lineup with those guys ahead of him, maybe that turns into 80 home runs. But, you know, that's not a top 10 guy, even at a down position. I think that kind of puts him in the 15-ish range in a good year. And, you know, sure, you can say he's got a little bit of upside left on top of that, but I'm not holding out much hope for that lingering upside to come back. Anyone else want to chime in?
I was just going to say, I said this in the comment for Fox Sports, because I have nothing left to say for Detroit, so I just talked about Nick Castellanos. But from to shorten kind of what Brett was saying about the second half, from July 1st to August 30th, I mean, what I was saying was it's so tempting to quit on him, but then he does something to pull you back in. So from July 1st to August 30th, he was .272, .333, .527. And that's only 2 months, so you don't want to overvalue it, but when you know, like when you watch him swing and it looks so pretty and you know his prospect pedigree, you're kind of like, yeah, that's not, I mean, probably not the slugging, but you know, .272 with something in the .470, .460 range, that's probably more reasonable. And that's not, you know, you're not going to hate it even if you don't love it. And it's tempting to be, you know, to be drawn into that. So I want to believe, but I'm struggling at this point.
Yeah, I think so, Craig, going off of what you said, I agree that that could happen, but I think that's sort of his ultimate upside, and I'm not really willing to invest in it at this point. Like, if he was on the waiver wire or something, fine, but I wouldn't really endorse him as a buy low candidate, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk now about someone I'm, like, 100% sure we have never spoken about on this podcast, and that is the super dynasty relevant Danny Valencia, who's hitting .281, .326, .503 with 14 homers in the incredible Jays offense, basically functioning as a platoon player. Just to give you an idea of how weak third base is, he's the 25th best third baseman, and he's probably going to finish the season with about 350 plate appearances. Mao, what is the best way to use guys like this in dynasty formats?
All over the field in spots where you have a bunch of holes. So he kind of fits into that Martin Prado mold. He's certainly overperforming when compared against Martin Prado. But he's one of those guys where, you know, you have him on your team and he ends up playing all sorts of different positions for your fantasy roster. Also, he was a Twin, a Red Sox, a Royal, and an Athletic, and you never really want to bet against those guys. Because they always turn in some sort of weird-ass surprising performance.
That's not a bad point.
And, I mean, I just think that when you have this guy on your team, you end up using him a lot more than you think you will at the beginning of the season, or even when you pick him up off the free agency wire. So this is a guy that you have to help plug some holes in. He's got a ton of positional flexibility. He plays all over the diamond, and this is just someone that you kind of use as a utility role, because your guys are going to get hurt, and you're going to need to plug some holes.
And he will. He was going to lose first base eligibility, but he will retain third base and outfield, so he'll still be eligible at third base, corner infield, outfield, and utility for next season. Brett, any thoughts on Valencia specifically, or guys like Valencia?
No.
Strong.
He beat Wade Davis in the 2010 AL Rookie of the Year voting. So he's always got that going for him.
Here's the thing. He he has a 124 WRC plus this year. He had a 141 WRC plus last year. I know that he's not really consistent and probably exposed in full time. But if you're talking about a corner infielder in a league like TDGX, I don't think it's at all unreasonable to be even excited to have him there.
Just to clarify real quick, he was 141 in 2013.
Oh, 13. I'm sorry.
He did have a down year last year at 86.
Yes, correct. Thank you for correcting me. I think given the state of third base, you know, that's not a bad corner infielder. He's always kind of had the ability to hit. I definitely agree with Mao's point about, you know, former Twins being weird and randomly good. I think that goes doubly for Blue Jays and Royals. Look at what the Blue Jays did with Chris Colabello. They had both of these guys on their team this year. It's very bizarre. But I don't know. I don't buy into a 500 slugging percentage, but he's kind of always been able to hit. And the issue is more with his bat. And if we don't really care about that, as long as he's going to retain that eligibility, which he is for next year. So I don't have a problem believing in Danny Valencia for 2016.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump back in. I made my glib point before, but the very first article I ever wrote for BP was about the opportunities there are in platooning guys with severe splits in deeper mixed leagues. And Valencia is really, he's turned into sort of a perfect version of this. I mean, if you look at his career line, he's .323, .368, .494 against left-handers in his career. And, he's one of those guys that's just always around. He's got value in daily switch leagues. He's got value in deep TDGX type leagues. So, you know, he's not one of those guys that I think is going to ever turn into a standard mixed league starter.
More likely to repeat their success, Forsyth or Valencia?
Forsyth.
I'll withhold, Ben. It's a 1-1 tie.
Forsyth.
All right.
So you're gonna withhold until we're done recording, or are you gonna tell us?
No, I was not, I'm not, I was, that was the tiebreaker. I was not gonna, I think Valencia, but
okay.
All right. So sort of in the same vein, you have to pick one to build a dynasty roster, not build, but to have on your dynasty team. Do you go Valencia, Solarte, Holt, or Enya?
Solarte.
I'm a Holt man.
Fuck Enya.
Welcome back to episode 56 of Tino. As always, we are sending you out with a little housekeeping. We will have a season-ending update in terms of the Hacking Mass updates at the next Tino episode, which will indeed be in 2 weeks. So you have just a Robert to thank for that. And the six or seven of you who actually played with us, hold on to your hats. That'll be an exciting update. If you're into daily fantasy sports, you are running out of time to challenge us on DraftKings. Come spend the rest of your money with us, and let's have fun before we have to wait many, many months before baseball comes back. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We look forward to them. We don't have a lot else to do. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. Find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru, Mauricio at mrubio52, Craig at CD, that's CD as in currently dominating the polls, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening. May God bless America and have a good night.
I'm very sorry for the haters and the losers.
Oh, Jesus. Do that for me.
Now I think that's amazing.
I can't believe we did that.
I think that was incredible.
I did have an answer for that last thing, but that's
what was your answer? I want to hear this.
Well, I was gonna differentiate. I actually think you did a good job with it. I think that those were good reasons. I was just gonna insult Ben, so I was really that's why I wanted. I was gonna say that Ben had to be bitter because of his failings as a host or something like that, which is something that I obviously would not bring to the table. As you know, salt is super tasters. Those of us who are at the forefront of taste really appreciate salt, which is why I am there. You know, I had an answer.
Do you like
Craig? You are scary good at being Trump. I got to tell you.
Yeah, you're very good.
It's very sad. Trump.
The building the wall around me answer was true.
that might be the best thing I've heard on this podcast.
Building a wall around, and also the whatever the Brett's Putin answer was.
Brett's Putin answer. I died. I had no idea.
I'm good for one of those every once in a while.
Oh man, that was incredible.
I had an Enya one too, but I wasn't able to use it.
What'd you say, Greg?
Brett goes, we shared a bottle of Yellowtail, but
I made him pay.
That was priceless.
That was so good.
I'm going to grab another beer, and then we'll play section two more straight.
All right.
That sounds good.
Oh, God. I don't even know. Like, I wanna tease what we just did. Because
I don't know how to do it.
But no one would know. It wouldn't sound great.
Oh, we just have to drop it straight.
Yeah.
Build a wall around mouthing. Still getting to me.
That was so good. I'm impressed that we did that for an entire segment.
I thought it was just going to be the intros, but it just kind of felt.
We just kept going. You it's a moderator voice.
No, I did. It just worked. I don't know.